Happy Mother's Day. Love you, Mum. Locked in the bunker, shadows shaking. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake. Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. It's Mother's Day and all the mums are still abed as they should be. They will soon rise and they will be greeted with a waffle bar the likes of which Willy Wonka would be proud. True story. It's a podcast about board gaming culture and growing old gracelessly. This week we're going to talk about all the games that were. We're going to slip through FOMO MOFO because, you know, reasons. We'll have a light traipse through my frontal lobe and voices in my head. And we will give someone the clap this week. We talked about giving someone the clap last week, and last week's episode was clap-free, which is very, very lame on my part. Saddle up, OMC crew. Well, it's been a week, and by that I mean not chronologically, but a good week, back to the normal-ish realm that is my world in the bunker here. Works, you know. It'd be lovely to just win the lottery or, you know, live in my bunker and hide from the world and never have to go to work again and just play board games, but, you know, reality. So this week, what do we play this week? It was a pretty good week. Monday, last week. Yes, the Peanut, the Fox, and I, we dipped back into My Island. So My Island, if you haven't been following along with our My Island adventures, or this is your first episode, or you don't know what My Island is, My Island is a legacy tile laying game. And basically, you're going to flip a card, and it tells you which tile you're going to put out, and you put the tile out. There's a few rules around where the tile goes, and as the game goes on, they layer on a whole lot more rules, and they're fine. Honestly, they're fine. We played My City first, which is My Island's predecessor. My City was, you know, pretty straightforward. We played that all the way to the end. It was just the Fox and I. We've got the Peanut in tow for this one. And My Island is played over, I want to say, eight chapters, and each chapter is three games. So that's right. So it's 24 games. Well, we just started chapter 5, so we're in the back half. We played the last game of chapter 4, so that's basically whatever that is. That's our 12th game. We played the last game of chapter 4. We're like, oh, that was great. And should we open a new envelope? And I was like, yeah, let's open a new envelope. So we opened envelope 5, and out came a whole lot of game. Oh my God, no spoilers here, guys. If you're playing My Island, there's no spoilers here. We opened envelope 5. Which is a great big fat envelope with a whole lot of stuff in it, including another board and some more punch tokens and oh my Lord, some new rules. So we set it all up, we applied our new stickers to the board, and I did the rules explanation, and I looked over and the Peanut was looking at me like, huh? Dude, are you kidding? Is this the same game? So I said, should we just put this one away for now and come back to it? And she's like, yeah, I'm going to bed. This is bullshit. You're right. So she didn't say this is bullshit. She's turning 10. But that's what she was saying. So yeah, we've put it away. We will come back to it when the sun is more up and the Peanut is a little bit more able to grok these new rules. It's fine. It's all fine. It's fine. It's all fine. Right? But it was just... It's like taking a switch and flipping it. The game, it's the same game, but there's about four new layers that come out when you cross that midway point. So we'll see. I really like My Island. It's a load of fun. And, you know, every time you open the envelope, you've got a shift in the rules. It's not always new rules. It's kind of a shift in the rules. And the Fox is loving it. The Fox really likes My Island. Of note, game 12, which was our last game of the first half, the Peanut absolutely rinsed us. You know, and she had a really hard board to deal with because there's some thresholds you got to put to bed at the end of game 12. And if you don't, there's some nasty penalties. And she was starting game 12 in a very, very gnarly position with a lot of nasty stuff that she had to deal with. And she smashed it all out of the park and she cleaned our clocks. And, proud Hamas, you sit at the table, you go, that a girl. I don't mind getting killed by my girl. That was great. So My Island, it's good. It's good. You know, I don't know if it gets wackier. I want to say wackier, like if the rules grit gets a much higher than it is right now, we probably won't take the Pina along for the ride because she's gonna have a bad time. But she's a pretty clever girl, so we'll see. That's My Island by Dr. Reiner, art by Michael Menzel, and my version's published by Cosmos. I think there's a whole lot of versions out. So not much through the week, but yesterday had a great day in the bunker. We decided, we as in the collective we, not the royal we, that we would have a shelf of firsts day. So that was myself, Super Trooper, Project L on the Cracker. So four of us in the bunker, we decided everyone's going to bring a game to the table that is sitting on a shelf of firsts. Some of you out there may refer to that as your shelf of shame, shelf of opportunity, shelf of firsts for me. These are first experiences, things I get to experience for the first time. So we all brought a game to the table. Well, not all. The Cracker didn't bring one. The Cracker is a bit more of a, I think, a passenger in Project L's board game journey. But he was very happy to be there. And so we brought three games to the table, one for each of our collections that we'd never played before. And we kicked off the day with my choice first. I think, you know, one, because I can have it preset on the table. Two, because I think it was the chunkiest choice of the day. And that was Vinyos by Vitalis Serda. Now, if you've been listening, you know I'm a slut for Vital's games. I absolutely love a Lacerda. And I bought Vinyos, the deluxe edition. It has to be 2 years ago. Now, this is, I think the deluxe edition is 2016. It's a 2016 publication. So it's been out for ages, right? It's almost 10 years old at this point. And the original Vinyos is a 2010. So the deluxe version actually comes with both games in there because the games are not just mild variants. They are really, I won't say quite different, but they are different games. There are two or three mechanics that are different. There's two or three layers that are different. And we played what they call the vintage, the 2016 vintage. So it's, you got two sides of the board. You can play the game one way or the other, and your player board's a double side as well. You play it one way or the other. My understanding is that the 2010 version of the game is the harder, meatier, chunkier version. And Project L has said, you know, in the previous weeks and months that she's never played a Lacerda. She wants to play a Lacerda, wants to, you know, pop that cherry. And so we did. And to be honest, I think Vinyos, as far as Lacerdas go, it's not very Lacerda-y. And I don't mean that as a slight to the game, but it feels more like a midweight, maybe not quite midweight, but just on the top upper end of a midweight Euro. You know, you don't have the issues. It's not even an issue. It's one of the things I love about his games. You don't have the scenarios where you have to have four or five things all perfectly lined up before you can execute item six, which is the thing you want to do for the huzzah points and combos. You know, you basically take an action and you do a thing. And you've got these lovely little cards, you've got wine specialists, and you've got these magnate action tiles, which give you extra actions in the game. And that's kind of it. You know, you're moving around the center nine spaces, which are your nine different actions, and one of them duplicates. So I think there's eight different actions that vary from planting vineyards or recruiting specialists or hiring wine experts or, you know, wine stuff. What's interesting is that there's no way to initiate production except at the end of each cycle. So there are only six cycles in the game. So there's six moments when you are producing wine. And if you haven't got vineyards, you're not making wine. And the wine quality's decided by all the vineyards start at quality two, but it's decided by the other add-ons in each estate. You've got five estates on your board. And so you've got you can plant a vineyard, and then you can build a winery next to the vineyard that will increase your wine value. You can hire a farmer, and the farmer will increase your wine quality. Sorry, not value. They're kind of related, but not entirely. And you can hire an enologist who works in your winery, and you know, obviously it increases the wank value of your wine, I'm assuming. And you know, wine wank value of wine's a big deal. And so then the more of these things you have around the estate, the higher the quality and the more valuable the wine is. And then you get to the money bit, and it's like, oh, money. Oh, I don't know whether, you know, Vital was trying to explain to us that all vintners are inherently broke as fuck, because that's how it felt at the table. You know, you've got this very tight decision because you haven't got any wine. You start the game with one wine in your shed, basically. Everyone draws a vineyard and you start with one level two wine. That's all you've got. And you can choose to sell the wine for money. You sell it to the local restaurants and hotels. You can export the wine for points, or you can show a wine at the fair. And there are three fairs. There's one at the end of round three, end of round five, end of round six. And obviously you haven't got much of an engine going. You've got one winery at the start, and you've got to try and build that farm up so you've got something to show at the first fair. So, and all that said, it was pretty straightforward to learn and pretty straightforward to play. I really enjoyed Vinos. I'm going to throw it on the table in the next 2-3 weeks and play the solo game, because I like solo games. I like playing with myself. And it was great. I really enjoyed it. I thought the art was great. I thought the gameplay was pretty fluid. It was pretty easy thematically, in that it makes sense. You have to plant grapevines before you can have any wine. And if you want better wine, you need somebody to tend those grapevines. And you can build a cellar. And as you put a cellar in there, each round the wine will age. So you can also hold on to your wine, and it gets more and more valuable as you hold on to it. So it's, again, very tight decisions on what do I do with this one wine that I've got at the start of the game. It's not very valuable. You do start with what looks like a big pile of money. We're all starting with like $20 or $23 or $25. Bagos, I think it's Bagos is the name. You start with it and you go, wow, that's great. I can afford wineries. I can afford vineyards. I can afford people. And then you get to the end of round one and you go, fuckballs, I have spent all my cash. There's no cash. There's no income round. There's no income round in Vinos. It's not like, well, welcome to round two. Everyone gets a little bit of money. No, 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 no. You want money. That's one of your turns. You sell wine. And you only have 13 turns in the game. Right, you get 13 turns. Similar for inventions. Inventions, Evolution of Ideas, another Lacerda, you get 13 turns. That's the timer on the game. It's not like on Mars, for example, which has, there's two or three very clear end game triggers, and you can push and pull on those however you like. This is it. You got 13 turns, right? So the first fair is after 6 turns, then the next fair is after 4 more turns, and then the third fair is after 2 more turns. And after the third fair, you get 1 more turn. And that last turn is basically just a milking session. Like, how can I milk points out of what I've got here? What do I have left? How can I milk some points out of this? I really liked Vinos. I won't say it's a top 10 game. It's probably not even a top 5 Lacerda for me. But I really enjoyed it. Enjoyed it a lot. You know, and I couldn't even go down the road of comparing Vinos to, say, a classic like Viticulture. Because they're so vastly different games. Viticulture is also a fantastic game, but it's wildly different. If you ask me which one would I want to play today, it would probably be Vinos, not because I think it's a better game, but because I've only played it once. I've played Viticulture a few times, and I'd love to get another go at Vinos. So that was Vinos. That was my choice for our shelf of first day yesterday. After that, we played something a whole lot lighter. Project L brought Skate Summer to the table. Now, Skate Summer is something that Project L bought. I don't know. It released 2 years ago, I think. It may have been on our shelf for 2 years. I'm not sure. But it's got this delightfully popping sort of art style. You've got these cards that look a little bit Gorillaz-esque, as in Gorillaz the band. You know, you've got this kind of, I won't go retro, but think street art style. Right, and you've got this great big map. Well, it's big for the game, it is. And you've got all these hexes you can move around on. And this is a push your luck game. So, Skate Summer. How does Skate Summer play? How do I play Skate Summer? So, you've got basically a skateboard in front of you. And you've got a hand of 5 cards. And you've got slots that start in the middle of the board. And you've got to play your first card in the middle of the board. And at the bottom of the card will be some little fletches that tell you which way you've got to push your little indicator. So at the very bottom of the board, you've got a little token that sits on a track, and you've got about 4 spaces to the left and 4 spaces to the right. And if you end up moving that 5 spaces to the left or 5 spaces to the right, you basically crash. You fall off your skateboard, you skin your knees, you have shame in the eyes of all your colleagues and competitors. And so you'll play a card and it might say, well, move this little thing to the left too. So you move it to the left too, and it might give you something. It might give you little flames, which are like fame and glory. That it's also a resource. Or it could give you little spray cans, which are a set collection thing, whatever. So you move it to the left, and it's simultaneous play. Everyone goes, bang, that's my trick. I'm doing, you know, a flaming ollie. And you move your little token two spaces to the left. Then, on the first round, you're going to roll two dice. One is the indicator dice as to which way the track is moving, and the next one has a symbol on it, and if there's a symbol on it, it's going to move. So you roll a dice, and the white die will say, well, you're moving your token left or right, and the second die has two blank faces and four faces with an indicator on it, and if the indicator comes up, you're also moving your token again. So if you've moved your token two spaces to the left, and the white die says you're going left again, and another indicator comes up with one, well, then you're moving it one more to the left. If you're counting along at home, I am now at three of four spaces to the left. Awesome. That's round one. Cue turn two. Turn two, you play another card, and the card gets played slightly to the left or slightly to the right of the first card. If you play it to the left, you're taking the little flechettes from the left side. If you play it to the right, you're taking the little flechettes from the right side. So if you are way on the left, you want to be playing something on the right to bring your little token back to the middle. So you play your second card, you move your token at the bottom, left or right. If you've been stupid and moved it all the way to one side, you crash. Great shame. Shame in front of all your ancestors. And, you know, certain things happen, but you wouldn't do that, would you? No, you'd bring your token back to the middle, and then the dice get rolled again. So the white die gets rolled again, and two of the indicator dice get rolled. So if the die says you're going left, and two pips come up, or two indications come up, you're moving two spaces to the left. If it says to the right, you're moving two spaces. Turn three, you play a third card, and you roll three dice. So if you're not in the, if you're not staying in the middle, you're running the very real risk of crashing out, right? You've got these, and then you've got special trick cards that you can get in certain circumstances, which are huzzah, extra cool stuff. They have extra little powers that come on. And you can tap out anytime you like. It's called landing. You tap out, you put your little token on the landing track. The landing track gives you a bonus. If you land first, you can choose the pretty fun stuff. If you land last, you get a lesser reward. But if you've landed last, you've got more cards on your table. And the more cards you play, the better it is for you. Because once you get through this step, we are going traveling around the skate park. And you're going to play the cards. The cards are all color-coded, either blue, red, or yellow. And all the hexes are color-coded. So you're going to now play these cards down, and if you want to move into a blue hex, you play the blue card. You want to move into a red hex, you play the red card. You want to move into a yellow hex, you play the yellow card. And there are some set collection things on the board, and there are some power-up spaces to get to all the way around the board. There's one for each letter in the word skater, S-S-K-A-T-E-R, for all the kids at home. I am counting on my fingers right now. There are six of them, and if you get around to all six, you get extra points, and each one of those spaces you go to unlocks something on your player board and upgrades. And there's points in there. Right, you get points based on the cards you play and the power, the level of the, you know, there's a tracky thing on your board. You got a track for each of the cards, blue, red, yellow, and the higher that track is, because you can upgrade that through the game, your blue cards get you so many points, your red cards get you so many points, blah blah blah. It's quick, like really quick. Like it probably took us 10 minutes to do the teach, and it was probably 25 minute game, maybe a little longer. Super fun. Right after playing Vinyls, it was probably just what we needed. It was super fun. There's an option to play a slightly longer game, which I think if we were going to do it again, I think we all agreed we would do, because it was, the short game is great, nothing wrong with it, but it's very, I can't see how you could get to all of the upgrade spaces, and really you don't have to. I mean, if you only got 25 minutes to play a game, you play the short game. It was super fun. Art was great. It was light and breezy, easy to teach. Would recommend. That was Skate Summer. That's designed by Randy Ryman, art by a company called Pape Inc., and published by Pandasaurus. Thank you, Project L. So on to third game of the day. This was, we were back up the spectrum, not the spectrum of, you know, neurodivergence, back up the spectrum of game challenge. And Super Trooper brought Tsulkin, the Mayan calendar. Now, Tsulkin is at least 10 years old. I think Tsulkin is a 2012 game. And Tsulkin is one of the T games by Board and Dice. And it's by the Italian Masters. And, oh God, where do you start with Tsulkin? So, Tsulkin has five massive interlocking gears, right? That's the Mayan calendar on the board. They're clipped onto the board, and each round you're going to turn the central gear, which turns each of the outer gears. So each of the four outer gears are going to turn when the central gear turns. And there's no player board. Been a long time since I played a Euro without a player board, which was kind of not off-putting, but we're setting up. I'm like, oh, I've got a little handful of cylinders. That's what I'm doing. This is what we're doing here. Like, no cards, no nothing. And as I said, it's been a long time since I've not set up my whole player dashboard. It was great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to bury the lead. Solken was great. I really enjoyed Solken. We had a lot of laughs around the table, largely because you can very easily go fuck yourself in Solken, and I don't mean that in the rude way. I mean, like, you can paint yourself into a corner quite tidily, and then you've just got to watch and do something very suboptimal. We'll get to that later. So basically what you're going to do is you're going to pop your little worker out on one of the outer four gears, not the inner gear, one of the outer four gears. You go pop, you put it out on the lowest available space. So you've got big teeth on the gears, but the spaces are numbered on the board. So the lowest available space is always zero, and they number up from there. So if you put your little dude on zero, there you go, you can end there. You start with three workers. So if you want to put a second one out, you've got to pay corn. So I can put a second one out. If it goes on a zero space, you pay one corn, and the second one goes out. If you want to put a third one out in the same turn, you pay two more corn if it's going on a zero space. Okay, so it's three corn to put three workers out. Corn, about a half hour into our game of Solken, was renamed fucking corn. Okay, because you're always looking for the fucking corn in this game. Where's the fucking corn? That was the mantra for yesterday's Solken game. Because if you don't put your worker on the zero space, if you want to put it on the one space, and you can only put it on the one space if the zero space is full, it costs you another corn. So when you're going fourth at the table, there's no space. There's only four zero spaces. So if anyone puts out more than one worker, there's no zero spaces left. So the first turn of the game, there were no zero spaces left. And I was fourth at the table. And I just said, Super Trooper, does the fourth person get anything extra? And he went to the rule book and he went, nope, get fucked. And so that was the game. So we, anyway, Solken, and then, so I'm waffling because I've only had two coffees and it's Sunday morning and I'm about to go do waffle bar stuff. So, and at the end of every turn, the center gear turns and all of the outer gears move. So that means that at the end of every round, rather than turn, round, the center gear turns and those zero spaces will open up again. But that only turns at the end of the round. So if you are last, this is where trying to grab the first player token is quite meaningful. Because if you have gone last in round one, you've spent all your fucking corn just to put a peep or two out. And then it comes back around to you again. And those zero spaces are probably full again by the time it comes around to you. So getting onto these gears is really important. Because as the gears move, you've got one that generates corn, fucking corn. You've got one that generates building resources. You've got one that generates opportunities to build or develop on the tech tracks. And you've got one that, maybe there are five wheels. One, two. Anyway, there's wheels. There's lots of wheels. You've got one that will do things like unlock more workers. And you've got one that you place little crystal skulls on, Indiana Jones style, and they give you huzzah points. Crystal skulls are really hard to get, right? Really, really hard to get in the game. So if you have a crystal skull, you get on these tracks. And the longer you leave your peep on the track, the more powerful the action is, because you get the action when you pull your peep off the track. Oh, you getting all that? It made sense as it was moving through my frontal lobe to my mouth. So you're putting a dude out, and then you've got to wait and wait and wait and wait, and then pull him back off. And when you pull him back off, that sounds awful, when you pull off a dude, you get rewards. It's not what you think. So when you pull your dude off the wheel, you get the rewards based on where he is. So if you put three peeps out in one turn, you're going to have to take one off in the next turn. You can't just sit there doing nothing, waiting for them to rise up, waiting for those wheels to go around. Is a delightful, delightful puzzle, Sokin. It really, really is. There's, you know, there's buildings that you can build. It's another mechanic, and they do specific things. You know, I very early on built one that meant, I built two, and each one fed one of my guys permanently, because of course, you've got to feed these hungry little bastards fucking corn four times in the game, and you need corn for everything. You need corn for everything in this game. And also then you got to feed everybody. So you can get these little buildings, and the buildings do things. They can either bump you up on the tech tree. There's also a temple track that gives you scoring opportunities. The art was delightful. It's got that very sort of, I don't say Lost Ruins of Arnaki, but it has that kind of very technicolor Temple of Doom adventure-y sort of art. It was great. Sokin was a great game. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It was about an hour and 45 probably for four of us, maybe a little more. We'd all watched videos, but remember that we'd all watched three videos. Sokin was the last video I watched on Friday night at about 11 p.m. So it went in and kind of rattled around my brain, and not much of it stayed. So we had to do about a 15-minute sort of just quick review around the board of what everything did. And I want to say it was about an hour 45. It could have been a little longer. We were laughing a lot. It could have been 4 hours for all I know. There were a lot of laughs around that table. Mostly, you know, us laughing at ourselves, laughing at others. It was, Sokin was fun. It was a really great time. And Sokin's by Simone Luciani, Daniel Tashini, art by Milan Vavron, and published by Czech Games. Thank you, Super Trooper. It was fantastic. So that concluded our shelf of firsts. We had dinner. It's the Peanut's birthday this week, so we had fresh baked cheesecake last night, with cheesecake with raspberry goo. And of course, the Peanut had been out to high tea with her bestie Beelzebubbles, so they were hopped up on, you know, all kinds of sugar loving goodness. So we had cheesecake. And at the end of the day, Super Trooper brought his copy of Flip 7. So clearly he'd played it before. Flip 7, I had not played before. Flip 7's getting a lot of rave reviews around, and after having played one game, I can absolutely understand why. So Flip 7 basically is a deck of cards. They're numbered 1 to 12. There's one number 1 card. There's 12 number 12 cards. So the higher the card is, the more instances there are of them in the deck. There are a number of little power-up cards, things that double your score, things that protect you from busting. You know, there's a number of those in the deck. And so basically what's happening, it's very pushy-lucky. And so what you're going to do is you get a card. The dealer deals you a card. You've got a 7, let's say. Let's not say 7 because it's called Flip 7. That's going to confuse the fuck out of everybody. Let's say it's a 5, right? So I get a 5, and then everyone on the table gets another card, and then comes back around to me, and Super Trooper goes, do you want another card? Now, there are 4 more 5s in the deck. If I get another 5, I bust and I'm out. So I go, yep, give me another card. So he gives me a card. It's a 12. I'm like, whew, that's 17. That's great. So it goes back around the table. Everyone gets a card, comes back around to me. I have a 5 and a 12. I can look around the table and kind of see what's out and about. There are 11 more 12s in the deck. Okay, 11 more 12s. And so I go, yep, hit me again. He gives me another card. If it's a 12, I'm done and I'm out for the round. I'm done. I have busted. If it's not a 12, if it's something else, that's great. I'm still in the game. Now you can tap out anytime you like, and when you tap out, those points go into your little bank. So if you can get as high as you like, you can get greedy and go, give me another one, give me another one, give me another one, and you tap out whenever you like, and then those points go into a bank, and it's first to 200 wins. So I want to say 200 was maybe 6 rounds for our table, sounds about right, because you can very easily get 0. And you can very easily, if you get the 2 times and you have a good couple of draws, because there's a double up card, which basically doubles what your score, you can easily get 40 or 50. It's no problem to get 40 or 50. Flip 7 is spectacularly simple. You can literally just teach it. You just go and say, sit down, here's a card. Explain the cards in the deck and how many there are, and explain how you're going to score and how you're going to bust. It's a 9-second teach, and then it's 15 minutes of hilarity. Squeals and screaming and laughing and table pounding and fist pumping. We had a few tears. We had a few tears last night because the peanut busted like five rounds in a row. The peanut has this habit, and this was her way when we were first playing spots, of I'm just going for it. I'm just get out of my way. Give me those fucking dice. I'm going for it. No, hit me again. Hit me again. And when she busted the fifth time in a row and somewhere on the table went, meh, it was a little too much for her. She'd had a big day. And so there were a few tears. And so she sniffed the tears back in, and we had two more rounds. She got some points on the board and agreed it was a great game. But man, Flip 7 was super fun. It was super fun. I'm laughing just remembering the game. And apparently, I think Super Duper said it plays up to 18 per deck. Can't imagine 18 people around the table. But it's so fast. It's like, do you want a card or not? There's no AP. Do you want a card or not? Well, I suppose if you had someone at the table that wanted to count cards, was thinking about everything they played, it could get a bit painful, but it's really easy. Do I want a card or not? Just gut feel it. Just gut check. Do I want a card? Yeah. Do I want a card? No. Do I want a card? And you're done. Super fun. Flip 7 by Eric Olson, art by O'Neill Mabile, and published by everyone. If you go look at Board Game Geek, there's so many publishers, and I can understand why. It's probably been published into every country and every language. Simple system, great game, and delightfully, the team at Board Game Barbecue, who are hosting PlayCon in July, thank you, Board Game Barbecue crew. PlayCon is 3 days of awesomeness, where you basically just play board games for 12 hours a day and shut out the outside world. They announced the other day that everybody who's going to PlayCon is going to get a free copy of Flip 7, which is amazing. And when I told that to the Fox last night, she was squealing with delight because she had so much fun playing Flip 7. And that's the games that were. Welcome to FOMO Mofo, where I take you through my personal angst-ridden journey of capitalist acquisitionism. As always, this is not an exhaustive list of crowdfunding projects, but merely those that have my personal attention, either because they are by a design team or development team that I like, a theme I enjoy, or because they have pretty toys. Sometimes it's all three. I want to kick on with a recap on something that I have pledged, and that's This War of Mine. Because This War of Mine, the crowdfunding campaign, is the gift that just keeps fucking giving, honestly. This is an Awakened Realms beast, and I say beast because it's going to be a big box overproduced monstrosity, and every 2 days there's a stretch goal announced. And typically with these things, and this is me, look, it's not over yet, the ride's not over yet, so who knows, there's still a few days left in this campaign. Every 2 days a stretch goal comes out, and historically with these sorts of things, I'm talking about like Castles of Burgundy and Puerto Rico and these sort of big overproduced reprints that Awakened Realms does, is they announce, here's the game. Hey guys, here's the game. It's $79. Ta-da! Wonderful $79 US, right? Which is $9,000 Australian. So here's the game. Wonderful. And then on day two, they go, here's some new characters you can play. It's another $20. And you go, oh, $20, I can do that. Boop, upgrade my pledge. And then day four comes along and they go, hey, do you like playmats? We got a playmat. Do you like playmats? Here's the playmat. It's $35. I go, oh yeah, I do like playmats. I really like playmats. Boop, I'll add that to my pledge. And then day six comes around, they go, do you like acrylic stuff? Do you like little chunky acrylic tokens? They go, here's acrylic tokens. You want acrylic tokens? Hey, we got acrylic tokens. You go, yeah, I do like acrylic tokens. And so in the end, you've gotten your $79 pledge, which is now, you know, $145, which in this climate, still perfectly reasonable. But this typically goes on for 3 weeks. And at the end, your $79 pledge is $500. Right? I can't remember what I spent for Castle of Burgundy. I want to say it was probably $300 by the time the dust settled. This War of Mine, I pledged on day one. I got the deluxe edition. I took the playmat, because the playmat's gorgeous. The playmat, if you haven't played this War of Mine ever, board game or the iOS game, it's this very dark, gritty, sort of burnt out, bombed building. And the playmat's gorgeous, right? And then so you got your player dashboards that are playmats, individuals, and then you've got the playmat, which is the building, and then the exploration spaces is gorgeous. And I took the acrylic tokens, and I took the event, just like an event deck. I took the small expansion for the event deck. I don't need the companions. I don't need the pet chicken. I don't need there's an add-on where you can actually go out and go to war with like a machine gun and go out and defend your village or something. I didn't take that. That's an add-on. There's a couple more little, there's a couple of promos. There's like a TV promo. There's a few things. And I didn't take that. So I took those, I think, four things. So I took, and the sleeve set. Because there's, I like sleeving. I'm not, I won't say I sleeve everything, but pretty close. So I took the sleeve set, the deluxe game, the playmat, the event upgrade, and the acrylic tokens, which were all released on day one. I'm like, okay, I'm happy with that. It's like, whatever it's come to, it's like $145 or $140 US. I'm like, I can live with that. It's still $12 trillion Australian, but whatever. Stretch pay. And I took that. And I thought, okay, saddle up. Let's just work on our self-restraint, which I don't have a lot of, you know, and I'm okay with that. We've got 21 days or 24 days, 25 days of this campaign. I'm prepared for a whole lot of FOMO, you know, day three. So anyway, day three comes out and they go, hey, we got two new characters on day three and it's included in your core pledge. I'm like, oh, that's nice. That's great. Two more characters, backstories, blah, blah, blah. That's great. Day five comes out and they go, hey, we've got this whole new scenario you can play. And then I got the notification. I'm like, oh, okay, well, how much is that going to cost me? And then this is included in the game. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? That's great. Day six or seven comes along. They go, we now have the Uber playmat where you've got a bridge from one building to the next. And it's two whole buildings. And it's like the playmat's like double the size of the original one that I've pledged for. Stitched, edged. And it's gorgeous. I'm like, oh, man, that looks really nice. What's that going to cost me? Oh, I go read the update. They go, this is included in the playmat pack that you've already pledged for. I'm like, fuck yeah. So here we are. We're on like day 19 of the campaign. Every add-on they've put in is not costing me anything else. Now, there's still a few days to go, but this is the first time I've ever sort of like, this is the Simon model and the Awakened Realms model and that sort of stuff where they launch a core game on day one. And they get you in with that $79, and then they get another $400 out of you by the time it's done. What I pledged on day one, everything they've added in, everything they've dribbled into it, has added value to what I've already committed to spend. Now, granted, the playmat pack was $30 US originally, so it's $30 US, and that was a big playmat for the table, and then individual player dashboards in you know, neoprene, whatever it is. And it was, so that's $50 Australian. And I thought, well, you know, that's okay. $50 for playmat. It's a really nice looking playmat and dashboards and whatever. Like, I've paid more. Well, now, just this morning, they've announced a third map you can build. It's a tighter map. It's a smaller map than the original one. It's like an advanced gameplay map, which makes things tighter and harder. And they've thrown that in. So now, $30 US, I've got the original playmat board. I've got the Uber 2 building one that's just monstrous and gorgeous. I've now got the third playmat and all the dashboards. I'm like, this is crazy good value. I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. Shipping hasn't gone up. I mean, clearly they planned all this. Right? Awakened Realms is the master of this sort of stuff. They know what their stuff costs and they've planned all this. This isn't they've gone, hey, well, let's give them another playmat. They've gone, well, we're going to charge them 30 euros or 30 US dollars, I can't remember whatever it is, for the playmat pack. And they've already planned to give us three full playmats and dashboards in that price. I've been really blown away. And I actually think it's a wonderful thing for the climate we're currently in with board games. And what I mean by that is everything right now is doom and gloom. Everything right now is we got to pay more. It's tariffs. It's now... I don't know whether Awakened Realms has done this intentionally or whether it's just a confluence of decisions that have just come together in a serendipitous union right now. But this is the kind of campaign that I look at in the current climate. And, you know, I'm in Australia. I don't have tariff issues, right? I mean, I will have tariff issues because the tariff issues are going to affect all of us globally. But I look at this and I go, wow, like, well done, guys, because I've committed a certain amount of money on day one. I was already happy with what I'm getting. I'm fucking elated with what's going to be coming. Now, granted, it's not coming till late next year, but there's now so much bling and so much good stuff coming, and I haven't had to put my hand in pocket for anything else, to the point where I'm now looking at like all the other stuff that I haven't taken, maybe not the pet parrot and goat and chicken or whatever it is, but some of the other little bits that I haven't pledged for, I'm thinking, well, I'm getting so much. Maybe. I don't think so, but maybe. And I know why, you know, maybe the reason they've done it is because they really want to sell those playmats. And for people that haven't pledged the playmats, they're not going to get people. For sure, they'll be quadrupling their playmat sales, for sure. For sure, because the playmat pack now is just stupid value. So I know we've already talked about this War of Mine. I just want to give you an update on that. I am pledged for that. I think it's a great campaign. This War of Mine, I haven't played the board game, as I said last week. I've only played the iOS game. I really enjoyed the iOS game. Very much looking forward to that. On to Aeon's End Beyond the Breach. Okay, so Aeon's End, I've never played. I've gone and looked at Aeon's End and Board Game Geek and you know, Amazon and different vendors over the years, because Aeon's End has a huge following. It's like it's a card battler. It's a little dungeony, expedition-y sort of explorer. Like, I've not played. I've watched a couple of gameplay things, and I've just decided over the years, not really. Aeon's End Legacy might be something really fun to play with the Peanut. You know, the community says it's 10 and up. She loves that kind of stuff. So maybe, you know, it'd be nice to get her into that sort of level of stuff. It's beautiful, beautiful stuff. Aeon's End has been going on for years, and they've got a Aeon's End Beyond the Breach is out right now on GameFound. And Beyond the Breach is the latest. It's a standalone package for Aeon's End. It looks fantastic, right? If you want to get everything Aeon's End, you can order the entire back catalog in this campaign. It's $635 Freedom Dollars. So that's like 12 million Australian, right? There's a myriad of pledges below that, right? So the base pledge for just the new game is 110 Australian. I don't know where it's shipping from, but it's got $55 of shipping on top of that. So it's a hard pass for me, because paying 50% on top for shipping is wild. That's wild to me. Like, I could understand if it was a $22 game, you know, a little card game or whatever, and they're like, well, to get it to you in Australia, we can't really get it to you for less than 10 bucks. So it's going to be, I can understand. But a $110 game for $55 in shipping, ah, man. But look, it's out there. It looks great. Aeon's End's got a huge following. I was thinking like, wow, yeah, maybe I'll pick that up and I'll get Aeon's End Legacy and I'll, you know, get a few other bits and pieces, because it looks great at that price. I'm absolutely waiting for retail, because, yeah, what? $110 for a game, I have no problem with. Another $25, $30 for shipping, I have no problem with. $55, I know it's only another $20, but yeah, no thanks. But it looks great. Looks great. On from there to Casus Belli. Casus Belli is a project by Martin Wallace. Martin Wallace is, Martin Wallace is an emperor of game design. Martin Wallace is responsible, at least in part, for the number one game on Board Game Geek, Brass, right? Martin Wallace designed Brass. Pretty sure Martin Wallace designed Brass. Maybe I've got my head up my ass. Hang on a sec. Brass, Birmingham. Martin Wallace, with other people, obviously. Martin Wallace designed Brass. Brass is number one. Brass is a fantastic game. Absolutely fantastic game. But Martin Wallace has designed a whole suite of games that are all vastly different. You know, he's also responsible for Age of Steam and Anno 1800 and I don't know how many games he designed. Quite a few. Lots and lots and lots and lots. So Casus Belli is his latest game that he's bringing to the world. And Casus Belli is a 4X... What do we decide Casus Belli translates to? Cause for War, Reason for War, something like that. Anyway, it's a 4X that's basically a Cold War scenario. And so you get out and it's the threat of war. A lot like Voidfall in that regard. Voidfall is not really 4X-y. And you can play an entire game of Voidfall without attacking any of the other players quite easily. Casus Belli is, you know, it's a 4X and you're out and you're exploring the cosmos. You're exploring planets. You're developing your civilization, whatever the case is. And you literally can't attack each other. Well, that's not true. There are four factions. One of them can attack. Two of them are required to be allies. And the third one can choose what they'd like. So if you're playing a four-player game of it, you could potentially have a 3-versus-1 scenario. Or you could have a 2v2 scenario. Or you could have the one faction that can attack may not attack. It's that threat of that attack that sort of keeps you at bay. And it looks really interesting. And my understanding is this is a reiteration of a game system that he's already done. It's a war. I think the original was called, A Few Acres of Snow. I probably have that name wrong, but it was based on a skirmish battle in Canada long time ago. So Martin Wallace brings really clever games to the table, very different games, and you know, he's a masterwork in game design. The only reason I'm not pledging for this is I just can't see it being something that gets to my table. I won't even mean often. I mean ever. you know, the groups I play with, we're not for XE, and if we are going to play something that plays like that, we will probably choose Voidfall, even though we've now, I don't know how many games of Voidfall I've clocked up, 20, 30, 35 games of Voidfall, maybe more. We will probably reach for that. If, you know, if we had, I would play it. Don't get me wrong. I will absolutely play it. I think it looks interesting. It looks engaging. It looks different. I was listening to Paul Grogan talk about his first play of it, because he's got a prototype. And apparently, if war breaks out, you add 2 full rounds to the game. And so he was doing a playthrough with his friends, and he said he got to the 3.5 hour mark and war broke out. And they're like, yeah, no. They just put it away. So something to be aware of. It could be a very long day. I don't mean Twilight Imperium long. God, that's Twilight Imperium. I played Twilight Imperium once. It was fine. But it's not worth 9 hours of your life. Sorry, TI4 fans. Like, I get it. There's people who play TI4 are TI4 maniacal. And I respect that. I can't spend 9 hours playing one game. Now, I will spend 9 hours playing a game like Agamonia or Elder Scrolls. But, yeah, okay, never mind. So yeah, Casus Belli, it's up. Casus Belli, the base game is 110 Australian, but if you want the minis that come with it, it's $230. Shipping's really reasonable. It's only like $21 for the core box to Australia. Don't know what it is anywhere else. It's a funny one because, you know, you've got Martin Wallace, who's a legend of game design, creating something new. It's only sitting at $69,000 pledged, you know, $69,000 for, you know, a new Martin Wallace game. And I don't know why, you know, and I could easily say, well, that's a sign of uncertain times. But then you've got something like This War of Mine, which I think This War of Mine's like at $1 million probably. Let's have a quick look. Yeah. Yes, This War of Mine is at 1.6 million euros. Okay, so you could say the industry's hurting or everyone's feeling a bit hesitant. But, you know, not backing a Martin Wallace game just seems, you know, it's not for me. So that's why I'm not backing. I love Martin Wallace games. I think he does amazing stuff. I just don't know why this is only sitting at 69K. You know, I'd like to see it do better than that. It's expensive if you want the minis. It's $120 Australian just for the plastic to go on top. And they're these clever little stackable minis. So if you're sending out a fleet of three, they sit on top of each other, which is kind of cool. I think the Sleeve of Death might, you know, might play into that. But anyway, Casus Belli looks cool. If you're living in the right countries, I can't remember what the right countries are, but I know the Canada, US, some of the European countries, there's a campaign out right now by a company called Darewy, D-A-R-E-W-Y, and I went in, and I'm like, oh man, that looks so good. And they're making wooden goodies, wooden accessories, dice trays, dice storage, rails for holding cards, and they're in like 6 or 7 different hardwoods, and they are spectacular. They're not shipping to Australia, so but I would be all in on that, to be honest, because they've got I think it's amaranth, which is a wood that once it's treated it turns purple, and they look fantastic. They've got all kinds of good stuff. If you're in the right countries, go check it out. It's amazing. And again, if you're in the right countries, because I literally pledged for this, I'm like, yeah, I pledge was done, locked in, and then went got to the bottom of the fine print. It's no. Well, Riders is getting a re-release. There was a campaign, or it's been republished. It wasn't a campaign. And the company that is republishing it this year has done a crowdfunding campaign to help pay for the tariffs. So what they've done is they've bundled up Well, Riders and Well, Riders the card game for a very reasonable price, very reasonable shipping. And they're doing that to help offset the tariffs for bringing the game into the country, which is an interesting sort of way to do it. Not unclever, really, to try and say, well, rather than charging you more for the game in retail, we're going to do this, we're going to get a wider distribution of the game, we're going to bypass tariffs for some of the sales of the game and use those funds to offset. It's only for Canada and US. So boo hammers, cancel your pledge, delete the pledge, go sit in the corner because you don't live in the right country today. But if you're in North America, you can get Whale Riders. Whale Riders is, a Dr. Rainer Kunitzia game of many years ago. It's out of print. There is a reprint going to retail, which you will be able to get your hands on. Or you can get it through this campaign. And then, Well, we're going to skip incoming this week because I don't have a lot. I'm just going to shoot through it now. I've done some pre-orders, so we'll hit pre-orders first. So the latest pre-orders I've put in on top of crowdfunding. So out of all of those, I'm not backing anything except for this War of Mine. Out of everything we talked about today, these are things that I was really interested in, spent a lot of time going down the rabbit hole and reading and looking at inside out. This War of Mine, I'm in for. I have pre-ordered Compile and Compile Main 2 and Compile Auxiliary 2. Greater Than Games, as you may know, is closing up shop. They've decided that they are not going to be functioning in the current model they're in. However, because Compile's already been printed, it's already done and dusted. It is going to come out. So Compile's a great game. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy Compile. So I've got Compile 2 coming sometime later this year. And I have pre-ordered, because this is a game that has been on my list since Essen last year. Finally, it looks like it's going to be coming to our shores. Thank you, Dean, at Advent Games. He's got it coming in on pre-order. He's the only pre-order I could find in the country for this. And that's Phoenix New Horizon, which is this really interesting, you know, I won't call it little game. It's a big, chunky, meaty Euro, but it's a little indie publisher, right? And so it's been very, very hard to get. I know De Vere's doing a reprint. De Vere's bought the license or leased the license from them to do a reprint. So De Vere will be doing a reprint of this in the near future. But I do have a copy of Phoenix New Horizon that I have pre-ordered. No idea when it's coming, but it's in the pre-order list. And so for incoming, for exclamation marks, the only thing I have coming, and I'm sure Postman Pete can lurch this one up the path, is ARCS released, well, later games released, an ARCS Errata Pack. There's some cards that are fudged up for the campaign. What's the campaign called? The Blighted Reach. The Blighted Reach campaign for ARCS. There were some cards that were missing, cards that were wrong. We encountered a couple of them in our playthrough. And so they released an errata pack that's got, I don't know, a dozen or 18 cards. It was $2, free shipping. So thank you, Leader Games. It's going to be a pack of cards. I'm quite sure Postman Pete can lurch that one up. And that concludes FOMO Mofo and incoming, all in one. This week on Voices in My Head, I want to talk about the joy in defeat. You know, we call it victory in defeat. Because, you know, I like to win. I do. I like to win. Man, I love to play. And so if I've had, you know, if I'm playing a good game, I don't care if I lose. You know, we're talking about winning versus playing. So playing to play, this is what I do. I play to play. Right? Now, if I win, that's great. If I can see a path to victory, that's fantastic. And I'm not yucking anyone's yum here. I'm not casting shade on anybody at all. I just want to share my stance. So I play to play. If I happen to win because I've seen a path to victory or I've done well or I've put a couple of clever moves together, that's awesome. It's awesome. It's awesome to win. I'm at the table with my friends. So I play to play. If you play to win, good on you, right? I don't think in the gaming circles that I move in, you know, I've got a couple of different, I won't say groups, they're all kind of sort of merging into one now, like two amorphous blobs that have met on the path. They kind of, so they're all coming together. But the people I play with, I don't think I play with anybody who specifically plays to win. Dustin plays for the puzzle. So sometimes it feels like he's playing to win. He's lost plenty of games. And I don't know that he cares. I mean, he cares. But, you know, he's not a table flipper. But he will work on that puzzle until smoke comes out of his ears, right? And it's not so much AP as it is he's trying to see a better way through that puzzle. And he's playing for the win, but not for the sake of the win. Well, that's how I take it anyway. I love playing games with Dustin. Anyway, so I don't play with anybody who's just a voracious winner, right? So we don't have any sore losers in our group, you know. But losing well is it's important. And when I say losing well, you know, if you are, it's important to me. Okay, if it's not important to you, I don't give a shit, right? This is my therapy session. If you can see the end game and you know you don't have a chance of winning, right? You lose in style, man. Go out hard. You know, losing well versus giving up. You know, because it's there. I have played games with people, you know, and I'm not going to throw shade or name names, but I have been playing games where someone at the table's gone and gone, well, I can't win. And so they don't walk away, but they're just kind of not invested in the game. I have lost a lot of games, right? I don't even care, right? I said, winning is fun. Winning is great. Losing is great too, especially when I'm losing to my friends. And they can shame me. No one laughs and pokes their fingers. And you can always look back and go, oh, I could have done this. I could have done this. All in the name of maybe playing better next time. But losing well is really important to me, you know? And so here's a list of games that I have to win in order to enjoy. And here's a list of games that I enjoy losing. Oh, that's every other game. I love to play. And that's one of the reasons when I approach rule misplays or take backs. I don't mind take backs at the table. You know, we were playing Vinos yesterday. We had a couple of rule misplays early on with a couple of things. No one cared. We just go, right, we've sorted that. We'll just move on. No one's really worried about it too much. And take backs, you know, like, oh, can I change my mind? Can I, even when your turn's done, if it's quick and doesn't affect anyone else, I'm all for it. As a general rule, I don't do rule. If I misplay, like if I make a play or I make a decision and 40 seconds later go, fuck, I fucked myself so hard, I just deal like, oh well, just roll with it. Now, if there's a take back or something, well, not so much a take back, but hey guys, do you mind if I just put this piece here because I missed that? And it's immediate, it's quick. I'm not asking anyone to revert back to my turn for 3 minutes. I will ask, I'll go, hey, does anybody mind if I just make this little tweak to my decision or I play this little token that was an add-on? All for it. And I think that's driven by the fact that I don't mind losing. I don't mind losing if we're all having fun. Now, I like to win, but I love to play, but there's a dude that puts me to shame on this. So we played Sulken yesterday, right? And the cracker, let me tell you about a guy who doesn't mind losing. The cracker, we're playing, and he'd obviously worked out his strategy. It was great. And he took his first turn, and Project L looked at him and went, why'd you do that? And he's like, well, no, he just won't. Then he took a second turn, which was great. His 1-2 was amazing. And Project L and we all went, whoa, grateful. Like, well, see what you did there. I can't remember what he did, but we were like, oh, all right. That was his peak. That was the cracker's peak in Sulken, was the 1-2 opening, right? Because he, it's not that he, the cracker's a fantastic gamer. He gets the game. But he got painted into a corner and he ended up having to anger the gods every 15 minutes. When you anger the gods, bad things happen. You lose points, you go back on the track, and you go back on other tracks, and bad stuff happens, and fucking corn. Remember the fucking corn? Well, fucking corn. Anyway, the cracker, he had a blast. And we're in our second last turn. You can see the end of the game coming, right? And because you can choose, there are certain circumstances, as remember in Sulken, the main gear in the middle turns. And all the other gears turn around it. Well, there are certain circumstances where someone has the power to turn to make that move 2 notches, right? Instead of one. And you can see the end game coming because you've got the little colored notch. Once the first notch goes all the way around, the game is over. And he basically looked at the table and goes, you fuckers are making too many decisions. He went boop and he pushed it to and basically ended the game. So we had 1 turn left. We had 1 turn left. It was a masterstroke. It was hilarious. It would have only been funnier if he hadn't forewarned us that it was coming. Right? He goes, I'm going to move that twice, so don't get too bogged down. It would have only been funnier if he hadn't warned us. And then his last turn, he's like, well, this is what I'm going to do. And we're like, what, why are you doing that? Because his last turn, he put all his workers out. And there's no point, because if you can't take your workers back, you don't get it. He put all his workers out, and he was paying corn for them. But Cracker, why are you putting all your workers out? He's like, shh, I have a plan. I have a plan. And it was hilarious. I laughed so hard. And so the Cracker's final score, I think the winning score was in the low 60s. I looked up what's a good score. It turns out a good score is like 80 and up. So we were laughing about that too. The Cracker had -3, right? So, but he was basically looked like he was on 97. So we were all celebrating. And hats off, man, because watching someone lose with style, it makes me so fucking happy. So happy. It was an hour and a half down, 2 hours, whatever it was. And yeah, I like to win. I love to play. I enter the cracker, right? It puts me to shame. It's a great game. It's a great game. I think I won that one, and I don't even care, right? Because as far as I'm concerned, the cracker took the prize off the table for the game yesterday. It was so much fun. Guys, if you love to win, hey, I'm happy for you. I just love to play. That's the quick trip through the voices in my head this week. This week, we're going to give a clap. I forgot to do it last week. I was very, very tired. No excuses. I was just very tired. I had a big week. I am giving the clap to Mark Carney. Mark Carney is our new PM in Canada. He recently met with Captain Cheeto, and man, he just holds his own. He is stoic. He is, he came out of that meeting, and, having been told, well, we don't really do much business with Canada. And the look on his face when that statement was made was like, really, man? Really? Like, we talk about the same two countries? He quite clearly told Captain Cheeto that Canada's not for sale on camera. Canada's not for sale, man. So, pull your head in. He was very polite, very respectful, and I absolutely think he's a fantastic, fantastic choice. So, the big clap, huge clap. That concludes this week's therapy session. Thank you, OMC crew, for your listening ear, your judgment-free therapy, and the solace of your one-way friendship. This week, I'm going to be looking to hopefully finish my first Elder Scrolls campaign. I'll probably set that up on the table today and play a little bit every day. I've got a day off coming this Friday, so I'm going to have a great day of gaming on Friday. I'm not sure what we're going to play yet, but I'm taking a day off work because reasons. And Saturday this coming week is earmarked for a full day of Frosthaven. I haven't played Frosthaven in months. I know the boys have been working through Frosthaven for a year and change, probably. I'm still on the very first character that I started on the very first play. I've limped that character through six or seven different sessions, and I'm quite fond of it, to be honest. I think it would be hilarious if I got to the end of Frosthaven with one character who never got to retire. You can reach me on the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can email me at wonmanclapping@gmail.com. I'm on Instagram. And you can help OMC by dropping me a like on Facebook or Instagram, or leaving me a review on whatever platform you choose. If it's a bad review, I'll survive. And this week's episode has been brought to you by the Sleepless Nights of Middle Age. Who said I can't wait to grow up? Because this is bullshit. Seriously. Thank you as always for your time. Your time is precious, and the fact that you choose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is always humbling. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. It's a peaceful life. Peace out, mofos. Locked in the bunker, shadow shake. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake. In your bunker, board games rolling. One man clapping, stories growing. Hard rock thunder, speakers blowing. Clapping loud, the unknown sound. I gotta go make some waffles.